I think Star Wars characters who are definitely boning, Lando and his weird, like...
Lando and everybody.
Lando, yes.
Lando and everybody.
Yeah. Well, literally Lando and the Millennium Falcon, based on the film.
That's canon, yes.
R2 and 3PO goes without saying. It's kind of the core of the whole series, I think. Their love for each other. 3PO and all the Ewoks, I think.
They want to. That's for sure.
They just have to figure out how.
Mm-hmm. He's pretty into it.
Yep.
Being the god of the Ewoks.
I don't think Jabba and Salacious Crumb are fucking.
I just, based on the fact that Salacious Crumb is...
the physics of it are tricky.
Vader and one of the guys he chokes seems pretty into it, I think.
Yeah.
No, don't stop.
I'm just going to keep saying doubtful shit. So they'll do this again.
Boba Fett and IG-88, definitely.
Well, yeah, yeah.
That's why it creates this tense work atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. although I will say there's another one, Bosk. Bosk isn't fucking anyone. Bosk is the president because he's the president of the getting no brain club. He stinks. Like, canonically, Bosk stinks. Like, he stinks so bad that I'm sure, like, somebody from across the bar is like, might be in the mood for a little reptile man tonight. Mm-hmm. And they get within 10 feet and they're like, fuck no. Oh, God. No.
There's going to be somebody somewhere in that galaxy who likes that smell.
It's a big place.
He is written about as if no one in the galaxy enjoys that stank.
What about Bosk and the garbage monster on the Death Star?
Yeah.
Could be love. His little eyeball pops up. Oh.
Ooh.
I wanna go to the engineering meeting they had where they were like, all right, so we're here to talk about Death Star operations, garbage disposal. On the one hand, we're in a giant space laser, so we could vaporize on it. On the other hand, I could get you a very good deal on a garbage monster.
I forget if I've mentioned this, but it is Star Wars canonical that the garbage monster is a force-sensitive being. Like, that's the reason it attacks Luke. It's like, Luke's the one. It's trying to hug Luke.
It knows. So, yeah. But how do we grapple with its death when the Death Star explodes? Because that monster is dead.
It sacrificed itself to teach Luke a lesson.
Does he have a force ghost? Is there like a garbage monster?
Yeah. There's got to be that means there's at the big celebration scene, just off camera, there's a big trash noodle.
Somebody give me that edit where it's Obi-Wan and Yoda and Anakin and garbage monster is the fourth honored Jedi.
This would be better than Star Wars 9. Let's just replace it. So, like, Star Wars 9, when they do the whole all the dead Jedi are talking voices to Rey stuff, one of those is like, feed me trash.
He is a creature beyond understanding. One who devours trash and is force sensitive. Mm-hmm. What does he use his powers for? To find trash.
He's a raccoon Jedi, basically.
Depriving the Empire of its trash, of course. Do you know how many bottle caps they could have redeemed?
So do you think Darth Vader knows that they have a force-sensitive garbage monster on his death weapon?
So, I mean, he's looking for them, like, during that scene.
Right.
So, perhaps he's funneling them toward the force-sensitive trash monster?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it probably is pretty annoying to him that he's like, where is
do you think Darth Vader has a memory of killing a youngling trash monster in the Jedi Temple?
Probably. That was that trash. So maybe that trash monster escaped the temple and is stalking Vader, is on the Death Star.
Yeah.
And is like, how the fuck do I get out of here?
I'm so close and yet so very far.
I don't have hands.
I just have this eye.
I've almost accomplished my mission. Almost. And all of a sudden somebody ruins it by coming in.
Mm-hmm. You idiot, you blew my cover.
That's it. Like, none of the movies would have happened if Garbage Monster had managed to actually achieve his goal in movie one, but we ruined it
just drowned Darth Vader right away.
Just for the sake of some knockoff whiny Paul Muad'Dib in white robes, right?
I would like to say, having to explain to your significant other what Dune is about when they have no concept of Dune, makes it sound insane.
Yeah, because it is. Yeah.
Yes. You're like, well, Timothy Chalamet got high and decided, yes, he was the Messiah. That's a key plot point.
I think my favorite is, what if Irish people discovered Islam? It was like a tweet from like 5 years ago. They'd be too powerful or something like that.
I don't know how Irish people would do a religion that forbids imbibing liquor. I don't know how that.
I don't think that's an out of pocket statement. I don't. Okay. I think that's fair.
Okay.
Can't be English people because they're spice.
That's also heat. It's at least 20 degrees Celsius.
Speaking of like trash compactors, how much do you think Nick Saban relishes the fact that his new office is windowless?
Is it?
Yeah, it's whoever the Bama 24/7 guy, Mike Rodak, was like, Nick Saban told ESPN his new office, which is windowless, they point out, is on the south side of Bryant Denny next to Ramajamas. Somebody pointed that out, and he goes, yeah, what is that place? Has it been there for a long time? It opened in 1996. So now he's like, now I don't have, gonna have to have windows to not look out of.
That's not even like not knowing a place that's like a campus institution, but maybe across campus. It's right next door, Nick. I know you've walked by it. I know you've walked by it. Like I know you're every day of your life.
But now he doesn't even have to. Now in the windowless office, he does not have to. Can you see him just like walking in and like looking at these four cinder block walls and just going like, oh. Like he doesn't even have to pretend to know what other things are.
There is something a little bit old dad coded about that, where like your dad out of nowhere will be like, hey, you ever tried this Cold Stone Creamery? It's crazy. And you're like, that's been around for so, what are you talking about? That's not new.
I love that innocence though. You know, sure. you don't want to spoil that because you're like, you've been busy. You're slowly
reverting to childhood.
Right. Slowly, you're discovering the outside world because you've been tied up with things like taxes and raising children, right? So, like, I'm not going to take that away from dad.
No.
You know, I told my dad this past week, I was like, hey, you know, people go to March Madness, like, as a group to gamble. And he's like, what?
Have you heard really? From your dad since he got to Vegas?
Yes, he did miss his flight, but...
So he's just staying there longer?
He did stay there longer. He did stay there substantially longer than he...
So he's out, though.
He is at least out of Vegas. I do not know if he has returned home. The last time I talked to him, he was in Houston.
I would like the Indiana Jones-style map of you and your father when you travel, where it's like, ba-ba-da-ba, and then you just stay for an extra 3 hours.
Like, if you did the global one for me, it would be like, what the fuck is he doing?
This is family circus, is what this is. Yes.
Little red dot suddenly turns green and kind of wobbly.
Then he's running on the highway to the airport for some reason.
These dots don't connect. How did you wormhole it?
Did he teleport?
Hollow Earth. Little known fact, you get a bonus on the Hollow Earth shuttle with the American Express platinum, partnered with Hollow Earth. The liberals don't want you to know about Hollow Earth.
It's so true. They don't, because they're all about their like public works programs and building a train,
highways got and his own, shit. Godzilla's
this is actually
got his own
how Kyrie
tram.
Spends all that time in Boston. He doesn't.
Yeah.
You're just describing Earth's like secret passageway through the conservatory. Earth is a clue board.
Exactly. This is Earth's secret clock ladder, like on Webster, right?
Earth has glitching.
Yes, you can clip through Earth if you try hard enough.
They're called thin places. These have been known about for a long time. Yeah.
This is the latest summoning salt video, how to glitch through Earth.
Oh, Jason, my other takeaway from Dune 2, man, there's a youth group that got real serious real quick.
Yeah, they tend to. That was a pretty fired up church camp. One of the most on fire I'd ever seen. The buy-in was steep. I think they'll stay pretty committed too.
Paul's a hell of a youth pastor.
They are going to convert their entire high school for Christ on Monday. That much I know.
Everyone, if you'd welcome in our youth pastor Stilger. Hi, Stilger.
Oh boy.
I do want a little
glow globe. Please join us for See You at the Hole. Sorry, that was a deep cut.
I haven't actually seen Dune 2 yet. I've seen enough social media clips to feel like I've seen it. It's, you know, but yeah. It Has everyone else seen it? Is it good?
Yes, I have seen it.
I have not seen it.
I like that it postulates a world in which sandworms can be buses.
See, that's okay. Again, they don't want you to know about the free public transportation we already have, the sandworm.
They want you to pay the airlines all that money when the sandworm can get you to Paris in 3 hours.
Via Paris sand.
You just hold on. Listen, everywhere is sand if you dig enough.
Uh-huh. That's so true, brother. They don't want you to know that either. Beneath the Earth's core is sand.
So
the Louvre got all that glass on top of it. What's glass made out of sand? Mm-hmm.
One important sort of like point in the mythos of the Fremen is that they will turn Dune from a desert planet into a water planet.
Green and like, paradise, yes.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know what, man? I am going to be the best lobbyist ever for the anti-Fremen like movement. Because I'm going to come along and be like, we already have free public transportation in the form of the worms, and they want to take that away. Where's that going?
Drown the fucking worms.
Yeah. They call themselves environmentalists. They want to drown the worms and all this water.
But then Home Depot comes in and pays you a quiet $1 million. And it's like, ooh, all right. Well, I guess Arrakis is built by the Home Depot now.
I love the inflation of how many years in the future is this? Everything's 40,000, I assume.
Something like that.
A million will still get it done. That's fine.
Yeah. Let's do Paul's Day.
I think the most important thing you should know about Dune 2, Jason and listeners, is that the Emperor of the Known Universe is played by Christopher Walken.
Hello.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
And if you're
I knew he was in it. I didn't know he had that role. That's perfect.
Can Christopher Walken not be Christopher Walken in a movie? The answer is no. No, he cannot.
He's one of those guys who shows up Willem Dafoe, who I'm like, oh boy.
Sure.
He's going to do the thing.
But Willem Dafoe can
Willem
do,
Dafoe,
like,
he'll play characters.
Like, they're all going to be out there, but he can, like, make choices. And this isn't even a diss, but Christopher Walken is going to be Christopher Walken.
So does he walk? So I have read the book, but I have not seen the movie. Does he really walk in like, hello, I'm the Padisha?
More or less. Holly, can you confirm this?
No, that's absolutely what happens. He's not even, I would argue that he's not, this is a strange thing to say. I think he's the weak link in the cast. He's just kind of like, he's not doing Christopher Walken. And I think if he was doing Christopher Walken, it would be perhaps a distraction to everything else that's going on. But he's also not really doing anything else. He's just like sitting there and exuding a quiet, sleepy crankiness.
It kind of looks like Christopher Walken wandered in and they were like, all right, you can be in the movie.
Like, yeah, do you think he knows he's in a movie? Is a fair question. Because he's kind of dressed in a muumuu.
Yeah, and he plays Florence Pugh's father.
Mm.
Just normal
also,
stuff.
Also, just in terms of aesthetics, I appreciate that even though we have updated this 50 years after David Lynch's or whatever, they still have a dedicated team to making the princess look real fucking weird.
Yeah, it's true. It's very Never-Ending Story.
She has by far the weird. It's like, oh yeah, Child Empress grew up nice. Mm-hmm. Is basically the theme.
All right, so go see Dune 2 and look out. Hey,
I loved
when
it. I'm making fun, but I fucking love this movie, and I'm not a huge fan of the book.
And you need it tamed. Yeah, brother.
Spice must flow.
And wait, these I can't believe we let a French garden Canadian, bats.
We let a fucking French Canadian run off with our with this great piece of IP, too. We ought to be ashamed.
Wolverine's French Canadian.
Huh.
That is.
Wolverine, you know, you make an accent. That's a compelling argument.
That's not a helpful argument, but it,
no,
I guess
but it
right.
is compelling.
He is British.
The irony of Wolverine having free healthcare is amazing to me.
Is that a
if anybody needs it? but also what, doesn't need it.
Is that his healing
that
factor?
Would be the most American comic book ever. Is, feel like he, is, has a superpower. He is
every, like every conservative says, like, yeah, it's free, but it takes forever and it sucks. So like Wolverine really does sort of fit the reality they've invented, right? Where it's like he's just gonna wait it out.
Look how unhappy he is.
On the other hand, can you imagine Wolverine in America reading literature that says, if you like your doctor?
I'll fucking do it myself.
Like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. He's like,
that was a copay.
I'm thinking about Wolverine's HSA and what he uses it for.
It's just like
Tiger Balm, right? It's just Tiger Balm.
Tiger Balm, Talon.
Because like in the winter, can you imagine how chapped it gets around them shits?
Oh, you gotta need a lot. You're gonna need a lot of Aquaphor on those claw holes. Well, that's the thing I said.
That's it. There it is. Go ahead and clip that, folks.
Thank you.
You see no promo 20% off. Of promo code lubed up claw holes.
Dot biz.
Are your lips chapped, Logan?
I feel it every time. It's a vague stinging.
Welcome.
Seamless.
To the Shutdown Fullcast. You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I am Spencer Hall, joined as always by Ryan Nanny, Jason Kirk, Holly Anderson, and on the ones that is Michael Ray Server. How we doing?
I feel like sometimes damn social shit.
Like a minute ago,
you want to read his address out loud? Doc's our producer. God damn.
I feel like sometimes people probably assume we do like we do the cold open and then we pause to have a meeting and then the show begins. No, it just strikes when it strikes.
Not unlike the Crash Monster.
It knows when the time is right.
Poor Trash Monster. I have feelings and ambitions.
You're
give me a lightsaber.
You're our Trash Monster, but
I just want to meet Luke Satan. Aww.
I appreciate that.
Hey, can I steer us real quick to a fun moment I had that kind of involves football?
Sure.
We don't usually make huge segments out of Georgia football players being arrested on DUI charges, because otherwise, what else would we talk about? But I had a moment where friends of the program, Message Board Geniuses, had gone into the dog vent. They skittered into the dog vent to collect reactions to the news that Georgia star Trevor Etienne had been arrested on DUI. And at the time when I looked at this post, I did not know that he had also been cited for several other things. Spencer, do you remember what the other charges were?
Overly tinted windows is one of them.
Okay, it's like
regular. Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't know that there were multiple charges, and I only knew about the DUI, which is what made this extra special post special. From Lakeside Dog: let's kick ETN off over a bullshit law designed to increase state revenue. Now, I'm not positive that he didn't mean DUI is a bullshit law designed to increase state revenue. But none of us are old enough, except for Spencer, maybe, to remember like what public reaction was when DUI first became illegal.
Well, specifically when open container laws in your car became illegal. Like, I don't know that. Maybe there is. What I have seen is old news footage.
I have seen old news footage of people being super fucking offended that they can't drive around with a Lucy Bud Light.
Yes, that they couldn't put a cup of beer in their car.
And I will say this.
Drove.
I do distinctly remember some members of my family enjoying the privileges of that pre- open container era.
Oh,
well,
100%.
Past the passing of these laws.
100%.
As a child, I did see that. Not with my beloved parents, but with certain family members.
Your parents didn't?
He's not going to throw them under
the bus. I'm not talking about my mother. I should be clear.
I'm not a snitch.
I've heard enough times that I think it's true that in Wisconsin, at least till somewhat recently, your first snowmobile DUI was a freebie.
Like a whole bunch?
Yeah, I haven't researched it at all. I'm just like, yes, I believe it.
Mm. That's an emotional legal truth.
Tell me whatever you want me to believe about that, and I will. 100%. Yeah. Don't drink and drive. It's bad. That feels pretty obvious. Yeah,
there, sure. Kids. We said it.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah.
Positive role models. The shutdown full.
Mark Richt has lost control of.
There we go. Now we're back.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's like slipping into a pair of real comfy shoes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, Holly, you and I invented that meme like 15 years ago.
No, we did. I'm almost positive.
Because
it's too long to explain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except that was maybe also one of the first memes that I invented that took on a precise opposite life of its own from what I intended.
It was immediately co-opted. The point was Mark Richt wasn't losing control. He was constantly kicking players off because he had control.
The only reason you're hearing about all these players at Georgia is because Mark Richt is kicking them off one at a time. And we go on television and they're like, Mark Richt has lost control of the program. I'm like, no, not like that. God. The first one of our meme babies to leave the nest and turn against us.
Is anybody familiar with the Francis Pomeroy Naismith Award?
Is this like the Francis Scott Key?
No.
Oh, the Naismith Award? Yeah, Dalton Connect's up for it.
No.
No? I'm flailing.
Different Naismith Award?
This is a different, like, Holly is correct that that is the Naismith Award.
I'm just free associating.
Traditionally, think of this is also a basketball award, and it is also named after a member of the Naismith family. In this case, James Naismith's daughter-in-law. This is a trophy that does not exist anymore and was discontinued about a decade ago for reasons that I truly don't understand. But I asked a couple more basketball-focused people. Connor from Homefield is who I asked. I was like, have you ever heard of this?
Indianans.
Connor did not.
Noted Indiana.
I also asked Whitney at Homefield, and she also did not remember it. So yes, you are correct. This was an award that until 2014 and starting in 1969 for men and 1984 for women's basketball was the award presented to the nation's most outstanding senior who, in the case of men, was 6 feet or shorter, and in the case of women, was 5'8" or shorter. It was literally a short king trophy.
I'm actually disappointed to learn that I'm short for a basketball player.
I'm sorry to hear that too on your behalf.
I was always in the back row in my class pictures. What the fuck?
A lot of fun.
Don't ask about other reasons they might have put me back there.
A lot of fun people won this. Muggsy Bogues won this award. Tim Hardaway won this award. Tyus Edney, Earl Boykins, Scoonie Penn. What a remembering name Scoonie Penn is. Jameer Nelson, Nate Robinson. On the women's side, Kara Lawson won this award at Tennessee. Becky Hammon won it. Even enemy of media herself, Kim Mulkey, won the first women's Francis Pomeroy Naismith Award. In the 1983-84 season. Like, this, I don't know why we got rid of this, because this seems like it's a really fun thing to be like, hey, here is a thing that makes basketball demonstrably harder. And if you can be good at basketball while dealing with not having, not being 6'8", not being, 6'6", you should be celebrated for that. And I don't know why we just stopped doing it. I think it's bullshit and it should
It's come probably
back.
Kim Mulkey.
You think Kim Mulkey poisoned it from the beginning?
Yeah, it got mulk pilled.
I am not going to let this slander.
Oh, hey, that story hadn't come out yet, but we all agree that there's absolutely nothing that's going to change, right?
That's correct.
I'm leaning that way.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be reported. I'm saying I have such a hard time believing there's something about Kim Mulkey that we don't already know, and they're just reporting a lot of it.
I'm trying to think what you could get LSU fans really mad at Kim Mulkey for at this point.
Unless she converts to Islam, I don't know. Which,
damn you, dude!
Her views are not incompatible with some of the more hardline. Huh, I'm going to stop there.
That's an interesting path that I don't think we should explore. Nope.
Contrary to the reports of this slanderous reporter, I did not receive the light of Islam.
I'm just saying, I feel like if you put, you know, if you're playing a party game and you're like, I've got Kim Mulkey on an index card on my forehead and you've got ISIS on your forehead and we're describing each other, we're going to be doing a lot of Spider-Man pointing.
Gotcha. Cool. Kim Mulkey, please don't sue. It's too late. I know it's already happening.
I enjoyed the parade of defamation lawyers who I saw on various social media platforms. Twitter, like,
Kim Mulkey hasn't hired us. Not it.
Yeah, yeah. Like when they were like, you know, that she has not hired the best one because she didn't hire me. I was like, that's hustle. That's hustle. Shouts out to the defamation lawyers who are like, I see an opportunity for advertising, and I am going to take it.
What you're describing now makes me think of some sort of like Bachelor style show where Kim Mulkey selects a defamation lawyer from 18 worthy contestants.
Except they're all chained up because nobody wants to be there.
And they have to do a bunch of shit that has nothing to do with lawyering. You're like, why am I doing mat drills?
Shut up!
Why am I in a layup line?
Kim Mulkey has to catch and contain her preferred counsel.
That's the most dangerous game. Being an attorney for Kim Mulkey.
Ugh.
Why do I have to let her cough in my face?
To prove you're not afraid of the woke mind virus.
Hey, at least you get January 6th off.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you know what I love? Do you know what I absolutely fucking love? Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like I've come to the bottom of several successive barrels on that joke regarding Mulkey. But every time I look at Twitter and one of those Kim Mulkey January 6th memes is trending, I click on it. And it's somebody who follows all of us. And I just want to say thank you to all the listeners out there who have taken this ball and run with it into the sunset. You are all so beautiful. And you're doing a great job. And I'm really proud of you.
Now, I do want to offer this. If Kim Mulkey does sue the Washington Post for defamation, again, for an article...
Washington Post, famously without lawyers...
For an article that has not even come out
yet. The famously non-litigious Washington Post.
Can you imagine the audacious shit Kim Mulkey's going to wear to court?
Can you imagine discovery? Brian, can we talk about discovery?
Sure.
In a case like this?
Yeah, sure.
So she shows up looking like Kristen Sinema's grandma and...
Whoa! That's meaner than anything I said. Oh my God.
And then what happens?
And then the jury, dazzled by the millions of baubles,
pieces of flair.
I think you have it wrong.
Finds it in her favor.
No, I think you have it wrong. She's going to come dressed in judge's robes.
purple judge's robes.
Why do you get to wear it?
Yeah, guys, I'm the only one who can judge me.
She's showing up wearing a mask of the mother of the jury foreman. They're like, how do you know my Nana?
She doesn't wear masks, you know that.
Right.
No, fair enough.
A mask specifically with a breathing hole to allow the neutrifying, purifying strain of the novel coronavirus through.
Imagine her being called as a 30s baseball player, and it's measles Mulkey rounding for home.
I did have one
poor measles.
I did have one non-Kim Mulkey thought watching the women's tournament, which has been real kick-ass.
Oh, it's been great.
It's been so good.
Except for yesterday. It's been fantastic.
Even yesterday was entertaining in stretches. Listen, Tennessee was down so badly, and they fought back into that game.
And then what happened after that?
And then they lost.
No, then what happened 2 hours later?
What, that I that West Virginia lost to Iowa?
West Virginia lost.
I shouldn't be put through this in one day.
Okay, that's fair. Go be a USC fan.
Oh, I actually am, because I realized late in the night, in a state of mild derangement, that USC has a mortal lock on world-class athletes named Juju.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Did you guys know they've got a Georgia commit named Juju at quarterback coming in?
I did not know that.
Is it? And as someone in my mentions said, Juju, you.
The 12-team playoff, which will be upon us this year, will feature playoff games in the first round played at the home stadium of the higher seeds. And at first I was like, this feels weird, like college football's postseason. high stakes or just fun stakes has always been about neutral sites. Like, yeah, sometimes you get a team playing in the stadium that they play in because that's where their bowl is. Like if Boise's playing in the Potato Bowl.
I think Memphis did that this year. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's not impossible, but it's certainly not planned that way. And I'd kind of been feeling weird about it. I'm like, I don't know. Like, you don't play college football playoff games on home campuses, but these games are
fucking electric.
Like there is a very different energy. Like West Virginia didn't win, but you could tell they were like, oh, we could end Caitlin Clark's Iowa career in her home building and send her home for good.
It is a haters.
You could tell
dream.
Iowa fans were thinking the same thing about the refs.
Yes.
On court.
And like and I think it also like I'm sure that made it more enjoyable for Caitlin Clark to go out like to end her career in that building in that setting. I was just like, okay, I think I feel differently about this and on campus games. There is one difference that I think will be tested a little bit. Playing them in March is not that hard of a sell because everybody's still in class or whatever. I am a little curious how this is going to work when the playoffs overlap with times when students might not be on campus and how that will all actually work. But it showed me something. It made me think differently about the 12-team playoff. That's all.
I wonder if, and there's no way of knowing, I'm just speculating here. I know that's a new experience for this podcast. I wonder if the absence of population on campus, I can kind of see this going one of two ways. Like, I can see playoff games being filled up like the title game and the bigger bowls get filled up by corporate seats, especially mm-hmm. when population on campus has dropped. But on the other hand, if you get the right location and you get a bowl game that is actually more full of townies than anything else, that's excellent riot potential.
Yes, I agree. I think that's great too. And yeah. I think college football stadiums are big enough that you can probably split that difference and get both of those elements.
Yeah. Like, I'm wondering if this might end up being a better experience than we're anticipating, if only because, like, if they have, if there's a thing, if it becomes a thing in December where, like, you know, this can be an event, like, you know, going to a Georgia State game on a Friday night is an event here. Like, if this can be, like, a family thing, yeah, that could be a lot of fun. This is all assuming that this is still what the system looks like by the time it rolls around, which who knows?
Yeah. Well, yeah, by this December, it'll be a 29-team playoff. That's the perfect number. We're stopping right there, we swear.
Depending on how many, yeah, we're leaving one team out of the Big Ten and SEC.
Yeah.
Sorry, Purdue.
NC State. The example I've always seen is like, so you're telling me like right around Christmas time, we're dumping everyone back into Penn State, like, you know, one of the most famously difficult to navigate environs in the Big Two conferences. We're going to fill up the second largest stadium in the Western Hemisphere just like that.
Hey, man, you know? They're so proud of it being all cold and shit up there. Let's see them put it down.
Well, there's also that, too.
Yeah, just y'all like, wanted to talk about the weather so damn bad. Let's talk about it.
Like the school that other schools that play them, especially West Coast ones now, have to like really, really budget around like getting equipment trucks there and all that shit. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to do that like on short notice for, you know what I mean?
I wonder if we can set up like equipment pools, right? That can be relayed from short distances.
Well, we'll just use the sandworms. Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably some there's probably some R&L carriers money to be made there.
Do like, you have a sandworm?
It obviously there's a lot that will change with conferences changing, and Split Zone Duo had a very good conversation about the 12-team playoff led by optimist Stephen Godfrey.
That was the weirdest episode in a long time because they were all enjoying it and nobody was yelling at each other. It was really enjoyable.
Rose Bowl traditionalist Stephen Godfrey.
Mm-hmm.
And I do recommend you go listen to that. But just looking at this last year and sort of saying like, okay, if we had had home games, home campus games for the first round, if Michigan, Washington, Texas, and Bama all got the bye, the home games would have gone to Florida State, Georgia, Ohio State, and Oregon. And that's pretty, like, that's a pretty good grouping, honestly. Yeah. Like, the idea that you would have those four teams hosting home games, I have no doubt that, like, they would successfully get those stadiums filled. And the idea that you could, like, pick your poison of team that you want to potentially see knocked out of the playoff at home in the first round, like, that's got good juice in every direction, I think.
Yeah, like one of the, every, you know, odds are one of those four is going to fall
every year,
right?
Yes,
like it's going to be a 2-2 or 3-1 out of that group advancing.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you to the women's tournament specifically, because they don't do this in the men's tournament, for helping me see that, yeah, it can be fun to just do these things on campus, even though we're used to bowls being the complete opposite of that.
And FCS as well, where
100%.
You get to see shit like... that famously, every so often, a Montana home game with snow falling and fucking Wofford is in town. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this stuff?
Welcome to the stadium at the mouth of Hell's Gate Canyon.
And FCS has the additional problem of, because only the championship game is played at a predetermined location, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And so every round, you don't know where it's going to be until the results. Like, you only really have like a week's notice to know whether you're playing at home or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if, well, FBS,
some teams will know they're playing at home, but yeah, other teams might not know where they're going.
Right. So like, I don't know if FBS is built for that. Like, I think this trial stage of the first round works like this, and then we do bowl sites after that is probably for the best.
So what I'm hearing is 85 team FBS playoff, because we need the money very, very badly.
To give to the players? No.
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 Have you considered donating to your local completely subsidiary economy?
That's, who pays the players? Guess what? It's you.
It's you, buddy.
That's so kind of you.
Yeah.
Where's all we that pay money the players, going? And now you're being the change. Look this at is, you.
You know how there's this thing for decades of anytime the NCAA gets into court, a judge is like, hang on, you what? You're telling me this is how college sports works? I can't, like, the NIL is going to face that, you know, of a judge saying, like, so fans pay players? That's, you're telling me you expect to get away with it? So, yeah, and then they'll manage to squeeze, like, a decade or two out of that and come up with an even dumber idea, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've
squeezed... It's a great system.
So you've just decided to do the entire thing as a tip based economy for football, or as a subscription service for my tight end.
So see, there's this app where you push a button. Each time you push button, money goes to that player, and it's a very grown up system.
Nice catch. Press A. I have a controller, and I'm sitting there pressing A to donate.
And all this is connected to academia, of course, for reasons that are very important, that would take a very, very long time to explain. But I assure you, absolutely necessary.
Is Greg Sankey at somewhere between $2 and $3 million now?
Is that all?
Yeah, yeah, but he's got a lot of disappointing SEC basketball teams, so I understand why he gets that one, frankly.
The minute that man, I you know what, like, I don't want to claim, like, oh, I knew that was going to happen. But, like, in retrospect, the minute he was like, there need to be more SEC teams in this and fewer small ones, I was like, they're going to bite it. All of them are going to face plant. Yes. No way.
Here comes Michigan Stripball University chucking up threes and knocking Kentucky out. No problem.
Just the spirit of Halloween College.
Here comes Auburn somehow making America root for Yale.
Uh-huh. America sweethearts. Hey, we love war criminals.
Which is, as David Roth said, this is the annual March Madness game that's the battle for the soul of the Republican Party.
I think it was Saxon Cookbook who said it's the school your senator went to versus the school he said he went to.
When you're going, man, I hope that team whose members include people who go to a frat house that has the skull of Geronimo in it,
Hope they beat these guys.
Wait, so did they get to take Bruce Pearl's skull home? How does this work? I'm not familiar with all Yale traditions. How does this work?
He ain't using it.
I mean, it's already empty. Do they get to drink out of it?
Man, I hope so.
These are secrets. We're not allowed to reveal them. Mm. As honorary Yale grads, I'm speaking that into existence. Gotcha. Much like your Kentucky curdledom.
Honorary Yale grad. Where?
Guys, we've been invited to Skull and Bones.
I mean, I got a skull. I got bones.
Let's see.
What's that?
Who's got an
Do you think they have any rib joints up there that are like skull and bones based, or do they not have senses of humor like
that? That'd be B-O-N-E-Z.
Oh, Paul Giamatti got an honorary degree from Yale this year. That's cool.
Paul Giamatti didn't go to actual Yale?
I don't think. Apparently not.
That's kind of wild.
Where did Paul Giamatti go to college?
SUNY Purchase.
Let's see. He's born in New Haven.
His dad was president of Yale.
He did go to Yale.
Oh, yeah, so they're just piling
on. He did go to Yale, and then he got an honorary doctorate. What the fuck? You don't need to do this.
Yeah. They just simmed to end.
Apparently. Yeah. Judy Blume has one. Yeah, all we got to do is Herbie Hancock.
We got to get Lane Kiffin one. That's it. Lane Kiffin, honorary Yale doctorate. Want to make this a project. So that he walks up there and he's like, I don't know why I'm getting this.
So we'll just tell him, he's like super unlikable, but funny anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just really emphasize his unlikability.
He made a successful business out of unpaid labor.
Yeah. Yeah?
Okay. Like, well, we're listening. We're listening. We
This he is a thing had... for though. Now that we've gotten the highest civilian honor. Like we should start gunning for honorary doctorates from places.
Raise what the bar.
Where should we start?
Florida Gulf Coast.
Okay.
What about we go to a place that's like infamous for giving them to people who they later had to like go to places that gave one to Bill Cosby and be like, hey, you want to claw something back?
Temple. I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for that.
I want an honorary doctorate from Arizona State. That's first. Okay. First call. Which
do you think is more valuable, the honorary or actual doctorate from Arizona State?
50% of nothing is nothing, baby.
So FGCU has a lot of health doctorates, so yeah. we could become doctors.
David Florida? Brooks has one from
in Florida,
Arizona
buddy.
State.
That's a matter of confidence, not pedigree.
I didn't think about unaccredited medical school honorary degrees. That's a whole new world.
I think Arizona State is probably doable. We have to figure out our angle, but I think we could do it.
Or like, what's the easiest place to get an online MBA?
Grand Canyon University.
Why don't we give out honorary degrees?
Yeah, which
maybe that's the move.
Oh, that's much better.
Why wait? Why don't you just do the Rand Paul thing and be like, I'll make my own medical certifying board.
We're a community college because we're for the people.
I'm a doctor.
Who do you want to give a full cast honorary doctor of football to?
If we had to start with Schnelly.
Yeah, first pick. But yeah, we'll do the honorary one for Schnelly. You'll be like, isn't he dead? And we'll be like, no excuse. We're still going to do it. He's owed.
Wait, what about like George O'Leary? But then we take it back.
After
a day of outcry.
I think he could use the creds at this point.
I think we could give it one to quote George O'Leary, unquote. I think that's fair.
You look at the first
George O'Leary who claims the first George O'Leary who reaches out and claims it.
You look at the picture and it's Houston Nutt.
As long as he has the documentation, that's fine.
Oh, we could give out divinity degrees. Jason could give out divinity degrees, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At this point.
I would do that. I would give out a doctorate. I'm trying to think of somebody who badly needs the credentials to do this, right? Somebody who badly needs the credentials. Besides Billy Napier.
There's enough titles floating around the Florida Athletic Department. You don't need to give him more.
Disagree, son. I need more epaulets and nameplates. I need it. Seriously, man, I need it to look like a Ming Dynasty bureaucracy back there.
I'm the Florida football sergeant in arms.
I'm the secretary of the Exchequer.
Fucking terracotta army.
That's it. I don't, you know what? I, when he gets fired, it won't be for lack of nameplates, pomp, or circumstance. No. I support him in this.
There's going to be a Florida staffer who, like, just sort of makes it through to the next. Not like it was, is intentionally retained, but is like, oh, this org chart was so long. We just missed, like, three dudes. So they're still on the staff now. We forgot.
Yeah. And also, he'll have something vitally important. They'll be like, did you know he was the only one with a playbook? Like, what? Yeah.
You're going to turn around and Dan Enos and Todd Grantham are going to be like, hi. Hello.
Spencer, can we look at the schedule? I know we don't talk about Florida, but Spencer, can we look at the schedule a little bit and just get a sense of like where your emotions are going to be on a week by week basis?
Oh, I can't.
To talk about Florida's opponents.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's the loophole.
All right.
Sneaky talking about loophole.
I think you're all sadistic, but luckily for you, I'm a masochist. Okay.
Well, you know what? You didn't have anything else to bring to talk about to the show this week, so this is what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
Defaulting to the Gators is what it's called.
Florida has home games in four of their first 5 weeks. These are those home games.
It's a great schedule. It's an easy schedule.
Miami.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to feel at the end of the Miami game to open the year?
I will feel uncertain and be filled with great anxiety. And whatever conclusions I take away from it will be, even the positive ones, will be undercut by the uncertainty of what lies ahead. Additionally, can you ever say that facing a Mario Cristobal team proved anything? It didn't, okay. Because Mario Cristobal might be managing something so badly that even the good things that you take away from it might, in fact, be illusory, right? Like, did we win or did we just beat a Mario Cristobal team?
So are you predicting bad win for Florida?
No. Okay. No. If we did get one, it would still be a bad win because there would be absolutely no way to tell if we did anything right.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Does that make sense? Because you've seen the way that man runs a football team. Right?
I understand where you're going with this.
Okay.
Next up, Samford, who in 2023 finished the year 6-5 and in what I believe was their only FBS matchup, lost to Auburn 45-13.
Mm-hmm. So there will be at least two or three infuriating mistakes in this game that will sour even a blowout for me. Mm-hmm. That's what will happen. There'll be something mm-hmm. like we give up two kickoff returns because we don't have a special teams coordinator.
Sure.
Or we'll give up a bunch of sacks, even though we have two offensive line coaches.
Uh-huh.
It will be impossible even for a blowout against Samford to not include confirmation of several of the negative biases that I already have toward the staff. So there, I've just played it out. Yes.
I'm not wishing for this in any way, but since you're in the spirit of you're feeling a little volley right now. At Tennessee, this is the game where you would definitely want to throw down your crucial season ending injury non-contact to bingo card.
Yeah, that's a good one. Right? Like offensive lineman,
like something real stupid, like somebody's elbow just like suddenly snaps out of place for no reason.
Yeah, or offensive lineman rolled up on. That is my I say this ironically, favorite injury. Love that when you go, ah, we just lost a guy because one guy rolled over. Great. Love it.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my conclusion on the Samford game. Go.
Next up, home against Texas A&M. In what?
Okay, this should be Tennessee week. So how are you going to transmute that?
This, and I'm checking, this may be the conference opener for Mike Elko. Yeah, they open with Notre Dame and McNeese. Yes, Florida is this is Mike Elko's SEC debut.
That to me feels like the game where we might get some false hope because A&M still establishing itself. They're going to be redoing everything. They're still going to be learning how to play football again because Jimbo Fisher didn't teach them that. So evidently they should have included it. They didn't put it in the contract. So yeah, I think like maybe we get like that may be sort of, if we look back and go, there was a point of false hope. The A&M game, I feel like, you know,
that lines up with what the Tennessee game was last year. So.
Correct. Correct.
So Holly's not wrong.
We'd be right. Again, we have an established quarterback. Yeah. We have, you know, which they really don't. You know, we definitely have like we know what our MO is, which, you know, they probably won't at that point. So the thing that Mike Elko is great at is defense, and that's going to take a minute to sort of like gel. So, yeah, I would go ahead and say that that's a game that I feel pretty good about and that will feel too good about, even if it's just a narrow win, because there's a whole lot of hell coming down the road. There we go.
First road game of the season at Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's going to be an ugly win because Mississippi State's real bad. Okay. They're real bad. Like, and honestly, if you want to know, if we lose that game, you could just preemptively give up all hope, right? Like, if you lose that game,
sure, that like, is a useful barometer of sorts.
It would be useful. It would be useful of when you can give up. Like, if we lose to Mississippi State, that might be the most economical thing we can do for the fan base. It's just to be like, pile it in. Shit.
Can I pop in with a quick interlude here,
please? Yes.
Andy Slater of Fox 640 has obtained the permitted list of musical instruments the Miami Marlins will allow into the ballpark.
I saw this. I
would love to hear it.
Now, I'm mentioning this right now because at the bottom it says, asterisk, the cowbell percussion instrument is permitted, but additional cowbell styles may be denied entry, which feels targeted, but permitted instruments, in case you were thinking, oh, I can't take my cowbell to the Mississippi State game this year. How am I possibly going to have any fun? Consider toting one of these. Cabasa. Congas. Mm-hmm. Bongos.
Yeah.
Trumpet.
Trumpet is my favorite.
Maracas. I'm just reading the ones that I definitely know how to pronounce. There's a whole bunch of Spanish language ones on here that I'm not familiar with, but that look amazing. Tambourine. Listen, tambourine, it might be the sleeper hit on here. Like, tambourine are secretly, like, especially in an enclosed environment, tambourine are secretly kind of lethal.
That could hurt somebody. Yeah. A trumpet, frankly. Like,
that's a lot. Trumpets are a lot, especially in, like, untrained hands.
Don't let Phillies fans bring trumpets to games. They'll throw that shit. 100%.
They will convert it into a blunderbuss.
Allowing both the shake and gourd kind of maracas and the kind of maracas that are super annoying where you spin them.
Yeah, sure. That's got like, the rope and, yeah.
Tambora, if you want to just kind of, if you want to bring in a string section. God dang.
Can I bring a cello in?
Nope.
Damn it.
Unless it's an emotional support cello, then maybe you can.
Buddy,
I have a prescription for this cello.
keep looking at that schedule. We're going to need an emotional support cello.
We're not done yet. Okay. This is where things start, I think, potentially start to really turn. This is the fourth of those early home games. Hosting UCF. Let me start with a question. Spencer, do you know who UCF's quarterback will be this season?
Oh, God. I should know this, but I don't.
It's Arkansas transfer, KJ Jefferson. Your beloved Womp Master himself.
Womp Master.
The Womp Master's brought it to iDrive, baby.
There is a real possibility that you have to watch KJ Jefferson just beat the shit out of Florida.
Again.
Yes, that is a thing. Like, effectively, that was the game that knocked Florida out of bowl eligibility last year, was the Arkansas game around, like, early November or so, if memory serves.
I'm chalking this up as an L. I was like, if KJ's playing, I don't know. He beat us last year with a piss-poor Arkansas team.
Yeah.
Like, so, with a struggle-bus Arkansas team.
So those are the first five games of the year. And I think, like, is it possible Florida goes 5-0? Sure. Would most Florida fans take 4-1? I think so. I think you can probably talk yourself into that. But here's where you would have to get at least one and possibly more wins for the rest of the season. And I'm just going to read them in a row. at Tennessee, home against Kentucky, Georgia in the Cocktail Bowl, at Texas, home against LSU, home against Ole Miss, at Florida State.
Yeah. Yeah. We're dead. Like, that's not... Just get ready to have... Like, just get ready.
How fun is it having to worry about Ole Miss and Florida State in this fashion again?
The good news is, by the time those roll around, the worrying might be done.
Oh, yeah. No, you just might be like, yeah, cash it, fire him, done. All right, cool. We're on to a new plot line. That's what you want. You want
Ryan trying to bright side it is one of my favorite genres of Florida commentary.
I mean, it's a little bit like The Walking Dead, because you go, well, even if something good happens,
you still live in dead. You still live in hell. Yeah.
Something bad is waiting down there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, like that's when anybody I know, like, I'm probably gonna do two or three radio spots or TV spots where somebody goes, look at me, bright side for the Florida Gators. And you just go, no. No. It's all bad. It's all bad. You're counting on Graham Mertz to turn into Joe Burrow. That's sure. What you would be counting on. And you'd be counting on everyone else to turn into Joe Burrow's outstanding supporting cast. Uh-huh. That is, brother, take your life savings, go to Vegas, put it on the roulette wheel. That's just as likely.
Did anybody else think Graham Mertz was on season 7 like last year?
Me?
Yeah. I knew he had been there for a minute. Yeah.
Where are we on the... I haven't done the math on this in a minute. How long until all of the extra COVID years wash out of the calendar?
I think it's still a ways.
Like, we've got like 3 more years of that, right?
I think that's probably right.
Good. just any number. Just say any number. And
yeah.
Sure. 7.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you're right. This makes it easier because you can no longer prove that anybody is or is not playing college football. You just say, oh, that was a COVID year. Yeah. You forgot it's COVID year.
Yeah.
Actually. Like,
Graham Mertz's first year at Wisconsin was 2019. He redshirted that year. And he will be... So this will effectively be like his 5th year of play. But I think he'll have one more, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the math has completely changed. It's like, only 5? Heck!
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a couple more degrees to earn.
There's got to be ways... There's got to be ways for... all of the current eligibility rules, medical waivers, and the COVID year, where we're going to get multiple people who are ending up playing 7 years or 8 years.
We've hit.
We've already got a couple.
Yeah,
I think Bud has like entertained this from people on Twitter at various points, but like, it's entirely possible at some point someone will sue the NCAA and be like, the idea that I can only play so much college football is a violation of antitrust. Like, I should be allowed to play 11 years of college football if there's a team that wants to have me.
This is the year
they named the law after Sinbad. This is how necessary roughness gets left tackle.
McCormick, Miami tight end. This is year 9 for him.
Yes, that's right.
Which, to be fair, is awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. Dr. McCormick.
That's incredible. I love that somebody's like, yeah, so, you know, I got an IRA.
I hope that they're also doing all of the things that happen in Necessary Roughness, like you know, walking up, calling all their professors cheekily by their first names.
Hanging out with the professors. And yeah.
Taking Journalism 101 from Kathy Ireland.
It's not going to be an easy A, boys.
So wait, if you are a 9th year player at Miami, how many Florida football coaches have you seen coming? Yeah,
this is the new unit of measurement, right? Because you can no longer, like, measuring a college football player's career in things like individual seasons no longer makes sense. You have to measure them. You measure them in Florida in Gainesville turnovers.
Yeah, so you're on 4. You're on 4.
The metric is GAT, Gainesville Administrative Turnover.
Yeah. So you would have seen your 4th. How many Miami coaches would you have seen?
There was a couple where, you would have seen the whole that week where they had like 2 at once. You'd have gotten to enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
But he was at Oregon. He was at, which also has had a bit of turnover.
Uh-huh.
It's been.
Yeah, you would be. On like so we're gonna see so many players who at this point will be like, yeah, I can rent a car in most states. It's gonna be a lot of that. like a ton of that. And I can't wait.
In the NFL, there is no margin for error. One mistake can change the outcome of a game. Science proves quality sleep can help boost reaction time, recovery time, and overall athletic performance. As the official sleep wellness partner of the NFL, Sleep Number's mission is to provide players with data and insights to optimize their sleep for the ultimate competitive edge. Sleep is essential for recovery, and we all have unique needs. That's why Sleep Number smart beds are perfect for couples, with individualized settings for each side. Since 2018, Sleep Number and the NFL have teamed up to bring quality sleep to elite athletes. 8 out of 10 NFL players, including 80% of Kansas City Chiefs players, trust Sleep Number for their best rest. And now, during Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store for details.
I did have something
that's
going to
make bowl week.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I had known that, I wouldn't have made you think about Florida football in March.
No.
Spencer, have you considered that this might just be the year to come on home to Tennessee, quit your day walking ways, and return to the state of your birth?
My stomach just hurt.
Do you want to be a Vandy fan?
Yeah. If you want to get technical about the part of the state you're in, I was being nice.
No, not a class.
Adopting you into the Eastern Brigade.
How close are you to Murfreesboro, ancestrally?
Closer than he'd like
closer.
To imagine.
Yeah, no. Like MTSU would.
Physically closer to Murfreesboro. Wait, where were you born, Borner? You might be closer to Murfreesboro than Vandy.
Oh, no. I was closest to Vandy.
No.
You sure?
What about you want to be a mock?
Samuel L. Jackson is a mock.
I would probably
I didn't know that.
I would go to Memphis before. And I would go to any of those.
Chattanooga's lovely. Fuck you.
Samuel L. Jackson.
No, Chattanooga is lovely. I'm just saying, as you know, like a football fan.
Samuel L. Jackson is not only a UT Chattanooga booster, he's an ardent Lady Vols fan.
Damn.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're both having a bad day.
Also, the mocks went 8-5 last year. Florida didn't go 8-5, tell you that much.
Yeah. You know, but if you were to give me, if I had to pick a volunteer state team, I would probably go with Memphis because you'd be like, yeah, it's kind of an erratic shit show that
all
fights.
Oh, no, that does not count.
That fights a lot, you know? And I'd be like, okay.
Are you saying Memphis is its own
Memphis
state?
Memphis is a city state. We all know this.
Mm. Memphis really is its own
Memphis
independent
is the
principality.
One who insists upon this.
The Vatican City of America, Memphis.
In a lot of ways, actually.
Who's the Pope of Memphis? I don't want to explore that.
Unfortunately, it's Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler.
I was going to say Key Glock, but yeah.
Okay.
So I did have something because
I'm so sorry.
Working on another project.
Always good to get into that 70 minutes into recording.
I had entertained the notion that there were, I think a lot of people, if you're a historian, you have to have this like sort of charitable, fair-minded understanding of what humanity suspended in the chaos of time does and their actions and their impacts. And you have to think of both sides of it. And like, nobody here is a historian. We could just look at somebody in a historical context and go, God, what an absolute asshole. Like,
except
what?
That's not the term we chose to use, is it, Spencer?
No. We're working on something where we're just trying to find.
Is it better if I say it? Is it more acceptable if I say it?
No, I mean, either one of us. It's a little more acceptable if you say it, but I'm comfortable with either one of us saying it.
Inspired by, should we go ahead and tell him about the manga? Spencer's been reading a lot about Genghis Khan lately, and that led us to learning a lot more about a certain historical figure who has inspired us at Channel 6 to create what we are calling the dumbest bitch in history bracket.
Yeah, and I have a real strong nominee. There's some very obvious ones in there, but there was the...
Mine is the guy who burned down Notre Dame.
The guy who burned down Notre Dame is sort of a sentimental favorite.
Listen, recency bias, but come on, he's a darling.
Yeah, I mean...
He's George Mason. He's going to make a deep run.
If you go to work and you burn down a cultural touchstone because you were slopping it up at your job, I'm going to feel warm feelings towards you and also award you dumb bitch status.
These are all men. So
I'm going to give you a preview of how the story ends by saying that it concerns Inalchuk, who was governor of Otrar in the Khwarezmian Empire. Now you go, man, I've never heard of the Khwarezmian Empire. There's a reason. Now I'm about to tell you what it is. Also, he died in 1219. Our events start in 1218. That's going to give you some clue of where this is going rapidly.
Hey, who were his neighbors?
So
maybe we can learn by thinking about who was around him.
Yeah, so Khwarezmia was like basically, you know, Persia, bit of Afghanistan, you know, where Iran is now. Just a very big, powerful empire at the time. And Inalchuk was a regional governor. And Inalchuk received an envoy and a caravan from the Mongols, who were neighbors.
Howdy.
At the time, the Mongols were, of course, noted, but like we didn't. It wasn't like, oh shit, the Mongols are here. It was like, oh, the Mongols are here. Heads up, you know. Not like, oh God, run.
Honey, come see. It's the Mongols.
Right. Put on some tea. It's Genghis. You know, like no. So
Genghis Khan, get your country out.
I hear you're big enough. You're building a horde big enough. So.
I hear you're riding a horse the size of a bus.
So, Inalchuk sees this caravan, and as I guess some regional governors will want to do, he said, oh, you got some nice stuff. It'd be funny if I just took it and killed you, which is what he did.
Men are too emotional to lead.
Yeah, so he killed them, and except for
He killed the messengers.
Except for one camel driver, right? One camel driver got back and told Genghis, like, hey, they killed everybody except for me. And Genghis Khan, being Genghis Khan, was like, I'm going to send them a message.
I'm a patient man.
I'm a reasonable man. He sent three envoys that were like, hey, you got to the Sultan, who was Inalchuk's boss, and was like, hey, you need to discipline Inalchuk or we're going to have to squabble. And Sultan Muhammad decided that he was going to call his bluff, killed the two Muslim envoys and sent the Mongol one back, killed the one Muslim envoy and sent the two Mongol envoys back with the disgrace of having their beards shaved. All right. So
now you've gone and made Genghis mad.
So Genghis gave you a second chance and you didn't take it. So at that point, the Mongols descend and they kill anywhere from 2 to 7 million people. It's really hard to tell.
That's quite a range.
Once you're in that 2 to 7 million range, you're just like, yeah, bad.
I think it's with the geography, it's difficult to get the precincts and, you know, they only had so many computers in those days.
Well, and like people were just dropping like flies at this point too. So you're just like, maybe it was us. Who knows?
How do you attribute blame?
Well, the destruction was so total that it's impossible to tell via a scale of millions just how badly Inalchuk is fucked up.
Also, yeah. Speaking of scales, in those days, there were dragons.
Yeah. Sure.
And there's a lot of runoff casualties. Like maybe the Mongols didn't kill you, but that giant pile of skulls they made fell over on you.
Oh, I thought you were going to say literally running off is what killed you.
That could
they
also
altered
do it.
The weather.
This was
they changed the climate.
Yeah, this is basically the Mongols' breakthrough to oh shit, it's the Mongols' status. Is this whole thing because when you go what was Khwarezmia? The reason you do that is because you don't. That's why you don't know it, because Genghis erased it because Inalchuk had to have some shiny stuff, and because of that he invoked the wrath of Genghis Khan, and he's definitely like high on. He's definitely one of my like two or one seeds in this sort of collection of oh my god, there are so many dumb bitches in history.
Who is the most modern person that is potentially going on to this bracket?
The guy who burned down Notre Dame.
Oh, right. You said
excuse me, yeah. Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That one.
Oh, don't get my hopes up.
there's young.
It's a lot of World War I generals on there. Mm-hmm. Those guys, you know. There are some 20th century dictators on there. American president or
Michigan
two.
Michigan fans will be happy to know that we are doing this with the assistance of Jane Costin and Michael Byrd, who you may be surprised to learn have a number of opinions on the subject.
I wasn't totally going to put Mussolini on there, and then I found a picture of Mussolini in a hat so stupid, I was like, yeah, you're going in there.
Finally.
Benito, you take the fucking hat off.
Finally, we can decide how we feel about Benito Mussolini. Thanks to this hat.
Well, you know, let's hear both sides.
So,
from the guy who literally was on both sides.
Good news, fence sitters.
The things, one, you're closer to some people's rhetoric than you would like.
I know.
And two, there's this unfortunate syndrome that you have where you go, wow, this dictator was really cunning and smart. No, he spent his life being a dictator. He's a fucking dumbass.
Sure.
He's an idiot.
Sure. Yeah.
He was just the guy who's like, I'm really good at being a liar and killing people. That's not, no, don't give people credit for that. That's a dumbass.
I guess by default, there has to be the dumbest dictator of all time. They can't all be geniuses.
Barely any of them are geniuses. They're just the person who, when the weather blew a certain way, it was like, need a murderous moron. Hey!
He's got an interesting hat. I think he should be in charge.
Benito is like, it is a good hat. And I'm like, that hat's so stupid. I'm glad they shot you.
It's not controversial to say we're glad they shot
me.
Absent the hat, you wouldn't know how you felt about this.
I'm pretty clear either way. The hat is just putting its thumb on the scale, Ryan.
Mussolini apologist Spencer Hall, right. Once again.
Again, you're describing actual people in Italian politics.
No. Surely fascism was gone forever after
that. Fascism under the name of a politician named Mussolini. Surprisingly robust, Ryan. To this day.
But cool. The fashion.
We live in an awesome time.
But that's what we live in.
We're probably going to have to put... Did we put Ron in there?
It's recency bias.
Actually need to put Ron in there.
He's a big old dumb bitch, but yeah.
Or would it be funny that he can't even make the dumb bitch bracket?
That's the thing. I think he's outclassed
play in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you'd have to say his name and talk about him. I don't want to do that. Ugh.
Do we live in a dumber time now than the aughts were?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think
John Boys and I were discussing this yesterday, and I think in some ways, culture. The thing that made me think about this is I was going to pick up one of my kids from school, and I saw a yellow H2 Hummer. And
it's pretty dumb.
There is nothing that looks more dated right now that it's like, yeah, man, I also liked playing Cruising USA.
Counterpoint. All right. Counterpoint, the Tesla truck.
Yes. But so this is the thing. People who bought a yellow H2, if they bought it at the peak of its sales powers or whatever, I think we're just like, oh, man, that's cool. But I think now people buy the Cybertruck. And they are they are aware that there is a negative perception of it, and they are overthinking in the opposite direction.
That actually kind of goes with what I was thinking earlier. We're in this decade now with everything we learned about ourselves and our country during the Freedom Fries era, and we are still acting like this. I think that makes this era dumber.
I think everybody thinks about it a lot more, whereas in the aughts, there was less overall thought about, like, culture as a whole.
Yeah, like, now we're doing it on purpose, which I would say is worse.
Like, nobody was thinking about, because it's John, obviously this conversation went to the hit television series 24.
Obviously, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which to me is like really peak aughts dumb guy culture.
Yeah.
Like 24 now would be probably something more like Homeland was. I didn't watch Homeland, but I understand like what it was. And it would have been like, this is a show about like the merits of torture and, you know, political power. That's not what 24 was. 24 was just here is a broken man who's going to tase the balls of his daughter's boyfriend.
Because
he might know information.
Right. 24 at every point is like, hey, it'd be cool if Jack came in here with a stapler. Yeah, there's Jack with the stapler.
Yes. Like, I think the only holdover, and it because it goes all the way back to this time, the only true holdover we have to dumb culture of the aughts is the Fast and Furious franchise. The Fast and Furious franchise remains dumb in a way that is just as powerful as it would have worked in 2003, just as well as it works.
Brother,
but not bad dumb. The Fast and the Furious is about family and ethnic togetherness.
Oh, it's fun dumb, but it's dumb.
Brother,
to be clear.
I need you to saddle up and ride.
Disagree. Speak for yourself.
I need you to saddle up and ride with me to a little place I like to call Yellowstone.
Is Yellowstone?
Ooh. Yellowstone is so fucking dumb. Oh my god!
Listen. I gotta tell you. I think I've explained this already on the show, but just in case I haven't, I'm going to explain it again. You need to watch. Everybody needs to watch like the first four episodes of Yellowstone and then stop. I got like through three seasons or something and then quit. But in each of the first, I want to say four episodes, maybe it's three. It plays out almost like a procedural because in each of these first episodes of Yellowstone, one of Kevin Costner's adult children commits a gruesome murder that he has to cover up. Mm-hmm. I'm like, one at a time. This is how they introduce everybody on the ranch. I'm like, Dad, I killed a guy. Dad, I killed a guy. Dad, I killed a guy. And if they had just gone on like that for the entire duration of the series,
sure.
I think it would have been not only true to the spirit of the source material.
Like the Von Trapp family killers in Montana.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
If they had just leaned all the way into it and just made it like this canyon out back that's gradually filling up with bodies.
Oh, Gretel.
So if you behaved in real life, like I think a lot of very emotional people who...
Why are you talking like Godfrey?
Who use their feelings as their barometer for anything they want politically or personally.
Yeah.
That is what you would get if you were the I believe they are the God, the Duttons. The Duttons of the family.
Yeah.
If you were them, that was how you would act, right? Like, if you're like, you know what? If you acted that way toward me, I'd walk up and slap you. That's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and they do that.
You.
And they'll do that towards any number of stand-ins toward people... Like towards people that everyone hates, right? On the Duttons, you're sitting there watching it. You're like, these people are just like absolutely sociopathic idiots. My God.
And then someone in its favor.
And then someone shows up and they're like, oh, I'm a sleazy developer. You know, I want to buy your ranch. And then someone slaps them in the head with a pistol. And you're like, hell yeah, Duttons, get him. that's it. Like,
they also do something very, very clever, which... They take Kelly Riley, who's this brilliant British actress, by the way. They take Kelly Riley, who you may remember from Britannica, and also, more importantly, from the Joe Wright Pride and Prejudice. And they let her be in a way that you don't really get to see women on television ever do. They let her be just this absolute sleazebag asshole. Like, she's the fucking worst, and they make no, this is a compliment, they make no attempt to redeem her. There is no attempt to like soften her for any significant length of time or to give her redeeming qualities and characteristics. She's just an asshole, and only dudes get to do that on most television programs, and I support this step in equality.
To tie the circle back, 24 was a show that did this plenty as well. 24 was very happy to be like, yep, here is Lady Terrorist, who is
Mandy.
A bad person.
Oh, yep. I miss Mandy. God, you remember the Mandy reveal? Holy shit. My mother called me.
So I don't know. I think like there's a strong case to be made for the aughts we were collectively dumber but didn't know that we were dumb. Now we are we are collectively smarter but choosing dumb, if that makes sense.
We're dumb in the light. We're dumb with the scales falling from our eyes.
Yeah.
Smarter would be a stretch. I think smarter is always a stretch.
Wallowing in our dumbness is I do think that is the thing now.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
Though I think the point of contention is like we disagree on what dumb means.
On what is dumb, yeah, 100%. And I don't I think in the aughts, joke,
we've gone mask off.
I think in the aughts, most of us didn't care what was like everything was dumb and it was fine.
We are now very aware of dumbness.
This is the new everything was beautiful and nothing hurt.
Yeah.
Everything was dumb and everything hurt.
That's the real nostalgia here. It's not that everything was better in the aughts, it's just that everything was fucking stupid.
Anyway, we came of age then, so, you know, fortunately we all emerged with no
normal,
no formative scars.
Doing awesome.
Yeah, I feel like there's some deflection that happens when you hear, say, someone in Gen Z go, well, yeah, but all boomers had lead poisoning. And you go, that's true, but you also
did they have... say that?
Oh, yeah.
That's a big... mean.
It's also accurate.
Never mind.
Spencer, you don't have lead poisoning.
I have news for you.
Oh, that sucks, buddy.
I'm so smart, the lead poisoning doesn't
plumbing
even
faze business.
Me.
It's a business.
Lead poisoning business.
It's actually not from it's not from municipal malfeasance at all. He just swallowed a shit ton of fishing weights as a kid.
It was during bulking season.
Listen, podcast business is PB, and that's lead on the
wow.
I'm throwing
the signs
back.
Were clear.
Wow. You finally figured out my clever lead poison boomer ruse.
He's been poisoning us this whole time. He's trying.
How'd you get lead poisoning from a podcast? Well, let me tell you.
How'd you open a trap door under Jason?
Sorry.
Jason, come back.
He auto-tuned out.
Whoa!
But I wanted to figure out. I'm like, who are, like, in the history of, like, college football, which has no shortage for these things. Like, who were the real historical dumbasses? Who were the big dumb bitches? Like, who just, man, how did they get power?
Are you talking about, like, integration holdouts or, like, schematically?
Yeah, you know, you can put it however you want. Like, one of the first that I thought of was a guy who was so racist that they took him off the name of the stadium, which is Curly Bird. Curly Bird of mm-hmm. Maryland, who was a horrendous segregationist. And Bird, remember, it's called Maryland Stadium now. It wasn't always called Maryland Stadium. He was so nasty that eventually the student body was like, yeah, we should take his name off. It's probably a good idea. Which didn't happen, by the way, until 2015. He gets my vote.
Yeah.
I'm being quiet because I'm wondering, I just got into a reverie wondering how long before that name goes back on the stadium the way that we're going.
Until another school decides, until the honorary degree
We have adopted Curly Bird as our own.
Curly Bird Stadium at Liberty University.
Which, like, way to waste an awesome name, dumbass.
Yeah, seriously. Curly Bird.
It's a little reductionist, but I think I will go with I think it's a Utah professor who told the Pac-12, like, no, reject ESPN's offer. You can get much more money than this. Like, I understand.
Media science.
I don't want to put it all on this one person, and I think
but it's
there's
fun,
a lot of,
and no harm done if we do.
At the very least, I think that's one that looks like a whoopsie after the fact.
That's a massive whoopsie. Yeah.
There's a lot of whoopsies in the Pac-12, though.
Larry Scott.
Larry Scott is a
Larry
great
Scott's
whoopsie.
A big old whoopsie. Yeah.
No, there's only two. Sorry.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. I don't care what anybody says.
That's a good one. I think that if you were looking for people who had just were like made the dumbest possible decisions from a career perspective, it's real hard not to select Dennis Franchione because Dennis Franchione.
He was a wanderer, baby.
But that's one way to put it.
In a manner of speaking. Mm-hmm. You know?
In terms of bad career decisions, mm-hmm. that man lost a job because he had. And I mean, respect from one newsletter writer to another, he lost a job, not because he was doing some flagrant crazy shit, but because he had a sideline selling a newsletter about his own program. You say entrepreneurial innovation, I would say, man, that's some big dumb shit right there.
Kansas hiring Charlie Weiss remains, like, stunningly up there. Mm. Like, Notre Dame hiring Charlie Weiss, I don't think was the problem. I understand why they made that choice. Notre Dame extending Charlie Weiss as early, what, like six games into his tenure or something? Mm-hmm. Like that was their dumbass move. But like
that one period of time where Notre Dame was paying like three different coaches, where they were paying Weiss not to coach, paying Willingham not to coach, and then
paying
shit,
Kelly
what happened
to
after
coach?
That?
Kelly came after Weiss, so.
Yeah.
The Weiss thing, when Kansas hired him, it was very much the expiration date has passed several times.
Yep.
Yep. Like, and I remember actually this happened during whatever editorial meeting we had at the time. And I remember I got to watch Spencer's face light up when the news came across that he was no longer on Florida staff. That's a bad sign when you're the school that's just hired that guy.
Yeah, it was just a like...
Alumni are delighted that he's gone.
In what world would this ever work? And that could not be answered at any point.
Yeah, there's another guy who is, I think, a very specific mention and one who I think might be unfairly blamed for some decisions. But fuck fair, right? You got your money. Sure. This is the price of taking that money. We get to say these things. Steve Peterson, who was the athletic director at Nebraska, who fired Frank Solich.
Yeah, this is the one I was going to go with.
Yeah, oh, I know it wasn't just him, but brother... In terms of tying your reputation to a point in history that everyone can point back to and go, that's who let the horse into the city of Troy.
I love horses.
Who doesn't love horses?
I love wood.
And
oh
it's
my
hollow
gosh.
Like a put candy in it.
It's so fucking big.
Hey, guys, come here. I want to show you something.
I mean, if you could go back in time, you'd be like, yeah, guys, bring it in.
Great horse.
Mm-hmm. What
Someone
do you think?
Just left it for us.
You look up like, wow, me and all my friends could fit in there. There's so much room for people in it. That's so cool.
I bet you could bring swords and shields in there, too.
We could have a whole party in there. That's how many people you could fit in there. Anyway, wheel it in.
It would have been so funny if they had been like, nah. And they had to go, like, wheel it back to shore and be like, well, thanks, Brian. Told you that idea was fucking stupid.
Yeah, everyone's just sweating their asses off in there.
Odysseus is the best because he's literally the first Bugs Bunny character, right? The guy who's like, yeah, see?
Ain't I a stinker?
Make a big horse. Big horse. All the Greeks are like, fucking hey, buddy. Trojans are dumbasses, they'll fall for it, and he was right. But yeah, that's Steve Peterson. If you mention his name among Nebraska, or hell, even Pitt people, where Pitt, you know, his record is a bit more mixed. But even with Pitt people, like, yeah, they speak his name, and bile rises to their gorge.
Ketchup, bile.
I want to hear from the wives on both sides of the Trojan horse incident. has he told you about this fuck every day with the fucking horse?
Paris was the original wife guy, if you think about it.
By the way, how drunk was Odysseus when he came up with that? He had to be fucking hammered, right? Okay. Pass me the grappa. Okay, so big fuck off horse. And everyone around the campfire
is
like,
hear me out.
Everyone around the campfire is like, I spent 11 years or 9 years. Fuck. We're only 70 horse. Miles from home and we can't get back. Build the fucking horse.
I bet some part of it was like, you know what? It's just nice to have a project. It's just nice to have a
I'm just glad they're outside and having fun. Hey, y'all, this is the original Warhammer.
Either the horse works or we sweat to death inside the horse. Either way, we're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Man. And I just got, do you...
They left this horse full of dead bodies.
I guess they would have done it in order of rank, but can you imagine having to be the guy at the bottom of the horse with all that trickling?
Ooh. Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah. The guy with the pan?
If you're lucky, yeah.
Just go
if
back
not,
and talk.
You're just like trying to breathe out through the horse's sandals or whatever.
You're down there changing the oil.
You're about a quart low.
You are the oil filter on the horse.
This is actually where they invented the term horsepower.
This is the pinnacle of civilization. Nick. Yeah, we couldn't do any better. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're like, hey guys, we're inventing Western civilization right now. We will be talked about in English classes, no less.
That sounds
I don't
like
even
a
know what English
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, but Spencer, if somebody showed up to your house with a big wooden horse, would you accept it?
Probably.
1,000%
It's free. Yeah. I want to be clear. It's free.
Don't pretend for a fucking second it's, like you wouldn't.
It's big, but it fits in your door, to be clear.
Yes, it fits in your door, and it's free.
I only have, listen, I'm leaning like hard yes, and only one innate tendency of mine says no, which is, where am I going to put that?
God. Hang on. I got this. Here's how we're going to, here's how Spencer will fall in this war. It's not going to be a wooden horse. It's going to be a paintable plastic horse. It's going to be a miniature, but not a miniature Trojan horse, which is the size of a regular horse.
The Trojan orc.
Ryan, the real question is this. Does it have a card on Wahapedia with all of its stats and numbers?
You know it does.
Yes.
Shit.
That's in a little ribbon hanging around its neck. You're fucking
Holy shit, it's a horse with imaginary machine guns on it. It's fucking awesome.
Spencer, it's got a million toughness.
How many wounds?
Oh, like millions and millions of wounds. Look how big it is.
If you'll come over and play with me, Jason.
Let's paint the big horse.
Oh. We'll all come over and play. We'll stay forever.
Never.
I think what we've learned is that the biggest, dumbest bitch in history is me.
No, so you're the one with a new horse. Woohoo! Could we, does anyone by chance want to throw on a podcast business?
Yeah.
Sure. Podcast business. Podcast business. Podcast business. We're going jazzy, I guess.
I was trying to do a drum roll.
I just wanted to mention this Friday, March 29th at Pendleton Bookshop near Clemson. I'm doing a reading of literature. It's free. Registration is encouraged. And at, April 20th, Saturday, in Ann Arbor with Jane Costin and Ace Anbender, we have an event, a panel, readings, Q&A, signings, beers at church, no less. That is, there's a small cost, but includes a copy of the book. And I don't know exactly what our capacity is or how many tickets we have left, but it's not very many. So if you're on the fence, go ahead and do that like right now. Those links are available at my website, jasonkirk.fyi, the events page.
Ryan, what's new with us not all being like this?
We're Not All Like This continues marching through season two. The Cal episode just came out. I will give you a preview and say the Baylor episode is coming out next, which will definitely just be fun and not at all tricky. And my other piece of news also comes from Texas. HEB is apparently selling churro bacon. Just wanted to put that out there.
God.
That's all.
Damn.
We are so much. I take it back. We are so close to God's light.
Yep. Churro bacon. That's my business.
Your A1C is Jesus.
How about Channel 6? We've heard a bit about.
We kind of.
What is?
We've heard a bit already, but
is it? Is it a big horse that I can order for my
home? How can I find all this information about dumb people?
It's in fact an enormous horse.
It is our subscription newsletter and website with Holly Anderson and myself. Think of it as a Trojan horse that you can let into your home, and inside is an attack force of entertainment. That's right.
Feed us carrots
and we will give you posts. That's right.
Damn,
including guests.
That's
we're doing a dumb bitches of history bracket.
We really weren't going to do a bracket because it's March and we despise being timely, but the notion of the trying to find somebody dumber than the guy who told Genghis Khan to go kick rocks.
Serber, you have a podcast business too, don't you?
We're putting out a single on Friday, March. So this Friday,
who's we?
The Killer Ants are, and you can find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, all the streaming platforms. And we spell our name with a Z. So that will make it much easier to find us, probably, or harder, maybe. I don't know. We're also playing a show Thursday, April 4th at the Gas Hill Drinking Room in Winston-Salem. We'll be playing the Winston-Salem Pride Festival on June 22nd. We'll play Reboot in Winston-Salem on June 29th. And I don't know if we're playing at the Flatiron on July 6th in Greensboro, North Carolina as well.
Hot dang.
And then I think there's more dates later in the year, but we'll probably do another podcast business before then.
Nope.
But you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitters, and we'll post that stuff there too.
I think the Z is correct SEO. I think that's the right choice.
Mm.
Yeah, we did it because it's
especially
really fucking
for when the
cool.
ants come.
Well, yeah, you got to distinguish yourself.
Yep.
You do appear to be the first result for killer ants with a Z.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big time original thought by us.
There is a DVD. Where is this from? Japanese film mm-hmm. called Killer Ants Assault in Resort Hotel.
Ooh, what's it about?